we have to acknowledge that we marketers are no longer fully in control, that our audience has a great deal of leverage over what we do and how we do it. And instead of resisting this as a marketer, my recommendation is to harness this, whereby you, the brand strategist, the marketer, the market researcher, you're going to establish the foundations of the brand, what it stands for and what not. And next, you will have to let go of some control and possibly even crowdsource part of your creative and certainly the narrative that people are going to associate with the brand.
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees, all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Rome, Georgia. I'm your host, Matt Lyles, and this week I'm talking with Emmanuel Probst. Emmanuel is the global lead of brand thought leadership at Ipsos. He's an adjunct professor of consumer market research at UCLA, and he's a Wall Street Journal and USA Today best-selling author of two brand strategy books, including his latest, Assemblage, The Art and Science of Brand Transformation. Listen, brands today can no longer try to force-feed customers with a flood of products that they don't really need. Now, hopefully, you recognize this and you understand this with the brands that you interact with. The brands that win over time are the ones that transform us and the world that we live in. Just like how a master blender uses the art of assemblage to know how to orchestrate, assemble, and combine all the right elements to make a fine wine or a fine cognac, a master brand strategist can do the same with their brand. But they have to be able to recognize and understand which elements to use and exactly how to combine them to craft meaningful and impactful brands. So from recognizing and shaping customer perceptions to delivering personalized, human-centric customer experiences, Emmanuel and I discuss his lessons all around that art and science of creating a transformative brand. So here it is. Here's my interview with Emmanuel Probst. Hi, Emmanuel. Welcome to the show.
Matt, thank you so much for having me.
First off, congratulations. Congratulations on Assemblage, the art and science of brand transformation.
Thank you.
It's been, what, 4 years since your last book, Brand Hacks?
You got it. Brand Hacks, the first edition, came out in 2019, so almost 4 years to the day.
Oh, there we go. So it turns out I am good with math. Well, talk to me about what's changed and maybe what stayed the same, if anything, with consumer behavior since the last book.
Yeah, I think what changed is an acceleration of what people really need. So it's more of the same, but on a different scale. Let me clarify here.
Sure.
Most people don't want more brands. Most people don't seek more products. We already have plenty of these. To succeed, what brands need to do is establish a true emotional connection with the audience. Most importantly, and that's the point of my new book, Assemblage, The Art and Science of Brand Transformation, to succeed, brands need to create products that transform people and the world they live in. In other words, it's not good enough just to deliver some functional benefits and a product that is easy to use, reliable, at a good price, easy to ship, great customer service. All this is really important. However, that's table stakes. To go beyond that, brands need to make a positive impact on me, the individual. Who am I? Who do I want to become? And the world around me, that is, contribute to economic recovery, make a positive impact on my local community and the world at large. And that touches on sustainability, of course, but also responsible commerce and other topics. So in a nutshell, Matt, what, you know, in terms of what happened over the last 4 years, well, there was a big pandemic in the middle. And from a marketing standpoint, this has accelerated this transformation and exacerbated the needs for brands that make a real impact as opposed to just selling products and demonstrate their purpose as opposed to just claiming a purpose.
So demonstrating the purpose, is that really feasible for every brand to be able to demonstrate that purpose?
You know, I don't think that every brand needs to jump on board with the whole purpose thing. And I realized that it's very trendy to talk about purpose. It has been for a couple of years. But to your point, Matt, no, not all brands need to demonstrate a purpose. Not all brands need to say that they will save the world. I think brands need to be genuine, authentic, empathetic with their audience. And if indeed they adopt a purpose, it needs to be realistic. It needs to be relatable. It needs to be measurable. And some brands are built around purpose. We always hear about the Patagonia example. Well, that's great. That's a brand that was built around purpose. And right. Then some brands were not built around purpose, but they can indeed adopt a purpose. And I can think of Dove, for example, a Unilever brand that does a really good job at that through their Real Beauty project. And then some brands were just not built around purpose. And frankly, that's okay. They can contribute in other fashions. They can contribute to economic recovery, to sustainability, to responsible commerce, to upcycling, to recycling, to other things, but not everyone, again, has to claim a big overarching purpose, at least not in my opinion.
Okay. Well, I think that helps out then. Maybe that helps out. Maybe that makes it less intimidating for some brand leaders to where we say, you know, we don't have to go for this big grand purpose. It's understanding what role our brand, what role our product can play, and how we can, you know, how we can find purpose in that.
Exactly. Precisely. It's the key point is to be relatable, to be authentic, to be genuine, and right. to make an impact, not necessarily to try to save the world when you make bleach or toothpaste.
You were talking about recycling or upcycling products. Last night, I was just browsing, looking for some headphones, looking at vinyl turntables. And I didn't realize this, and I don't know how new it is, but you know, like one of my favorite, I guess, vinyl turntable brands, Audio Technica, and they actually made this mic right here, that they have a refurbished section on their site. And so to me, like that helps speak to that purpose too.
Well, this is a great example. First, it's interesting that you are looking for a vinyl turntable. Why? Because it takes you back to a time. That's nostalgia, right?
That's right.
It takes you back to a time when life was simpler. And vinyl performs very, very well, unlike music streaming, believe it or not, downloads. And that's because in this world of technology and social media and artificial intelligence and dating apps and so on and so forth, we want brands, we want products that take us back to a time when life was simpler. And that's exactly what vinyl does for you. Certainly not, I mean, the quality of the sound might be great, but it's certainly not as precise and as engineered as a digital format. And then you mentioned Audio Technica, which is a brand that has been around for a number of years. And
right.
It's interesting how you said, well, I was seeking a turntable from them. They also make that mic I'm using for my podcast. So you're, in that regard, you are demonstrating this legacy of the brand and how important it is to you. You were not searching for a Dr. Dre Beats type of turntable. Now, right. It's possible that they don't even have one, but you were not searching for a Pioneer turntable. You could have done so. So, and last but not least, you were looking for a product that was meaningful to you and a brand that was meaningful in the past and in the present. And you had, let me guess, you could choose from dozens, possibly hundreds of different turntables. Yet you go to Audio Technica for what it means to you.
That's it. That's it. And for what it means to me, there's a number of different areas and layers to that, whether it's, you know, price point or the balance of price point with quality. And then to your point, just, you know, I love vinyl. I've collected vinyl for decades and decades, I suppose. And you're right. It is so simple to me, and simplicity is my love language. So I love being able to mirror all that and to have that as a part of my life.
You've collected vinyls for many years, and that's interesting too. You just mentioned simplicity, and I really love, Matt, that's how you and I got started on emails, your thoughts on simplicity. And again, vinyls are a demonstration of this simplicity. That is, you're going to have to listen to one song, and you're not going to fast track and do things like this. Again, from a technology standpoint, you really don't need vinyls. You can have tens of thousands of songs in your cell phone and you can stream them in real time. Nobody cares. You choose to engage with this format because it's going to bring you to a focus on the music and on the song itself. And that focus on simplicity, I think, is something that is so important for brands to understand. What is the one thing that your brand can do for me? What is the one thing that your product can do for me? So basic, but absolutely crucial. And I can think of great successes and great failures most recently that we can see through the lens of simplicity. Brands that miss the point of simplicity or succeeded that deliver something simple and therefore sold plenty of products or recruited plenty of new subscribers.
My opinion, simplicity wins every time, whether it's the experience or the product that you're delivering, or it's the simplicity of the focus that you have. Like you said, having that one thing, that North Star, that one big promise that you can deliver to your customers.
And to your point, Matt, that's what we call the big idea in advertising and with our clients. What is the big idea? What is the overarching idea that's going to work across your brand portfolio and ideally all over the world?
That's it. Well, you know, we were talking about vinyl and going back decades and decades. I want to go back a couple of more decades to a story that's been around for, I don't know, 70 years, maybe at least, if you go beyond just the movies and even into the books. I want to talk about James Bond. Because before your book even kicks off, you explain assemblage by expounding on James Bond. So what's the connection between James Bond and assemblage?
Yeah, thank you, Matt. James Bond is a metaphor for a great brand. Well, it is a great brand in and of itself, but it's a metaphor to illustrate the book. So let me explain. James Bond, as you said, has been around for a number of years, for about, I think, 37, 38 movies.
Right.
And the core mission and the core attributes that draw us to James Bond haven't changed. James Bond is a British spy. He's here to fight evil. He wants to do the right thing. He wins at the end. He's challenged through a number of roadblocks that he has to address. So the core attributes that make James Bond appealing haven't changed. However, the James Bond brand has evolved in many, many ways. That is, Q, who provides him with his gadgets, he is now openly gay. Before, he was a older British guy with elbow patches, which is a style. I mean, I love elbow patches. I'm just saying, it's not necessarily very modern, right? And Monette Penny, a secretary of his boss, is now a black woman. And again, prior to this, in the early movies, she was a rather conservative, traditional British lady, and so on and so forth. And well, even in terms of the evil James Bond fights, he used to fight the KGB. Frankly, that's less relevant today. Arguably, it is less relevant today. And now he tends to fight a overarching digital power, some sort of digital overlord, if you will. So net-net, the core attributes of James Bond haven't changed, yet the brand has evolved over time through the combination of new social and cultural attributes that make the brand just as relevant, if not more relevant than it was before. That's how James Bond still delivers very, very well in terms of viewership, but also in terms of brand partnerships.
What do you mean by in terms of brand partnerships?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, that's how brands like Omega and indirectly Belvedere and, of course, Aston Martin and the many brands that want to be part of a franchise, again, still align with James Bond in contrast with earlier brands, because these movies and the franchise draws some attention, definitely draws the viewers in, but also brands want to associate with the personality of the spy. So in that regard, the brand is as relevant, if not more relevant than it was before.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, and I really appreciate how you talk about focusing on the core of the brand and keeping that consistent over time, and then finding those other areas where you can evolve beyond just the core. And a lot of times, you know, I will talk to people and they'll think that, you know, in order for their brand to be more relevant today, they have to go through a complete rebrand, a complete revolution. And what I like to tell people is, if you're doing it the right way, I believe that your brand shouldn't have to go through a revolution if it's going through a constant incremental evolution.
And indeed, that's what brands tend to get wrong a lot of time. That is, they want to reinvent the wheel, and that's what marketers tend to do wrong a lot of time, to start from scratch with a blank slate. But that's exactly where the book is going to guide you. That is, there is a chapter about the remix economy and how to copy, right, transform, and combine. And the point of the book is to say, well, most creations in the arts, in advertising, in music, in movies are not 100% original. Neither is my book, to be very clear. It's inspired from about 300, 400 different references, right?
Right.
And most creations are drawn from things that exist already, but repurposed, remixed, to support a new mission, if you will. And so the point of this book is also to give you, the reader, marketers, the confidence of creating or recreating those brands and those new products without reinventing the wheel, exactly like what we described in the James Bond example. Keep what works. Number two, bring from culture and from society and other sources of inspiration what you need to modernize, to evolve this brand, to make it more genuine and relevant, and then deliver on this with a evolved brand, refreshed brand, and new products.
Well, one of the things that you talked about in Assemblage is co-creation. And I'm going to read a little statement here from the book. When you're talking about co-creation with brands, you write, you know, marketers are loath to admit that brands are now open source and struggle to manage the tension between giving away and retaining control. So I come from a brand management background, so that was so difficult for me to process there, because I always wanted to focus on protecting and controlling the brand. So how do we manage that tension? How do we go about understanding just how much control we should allow our audience to have with co-creation?
Yeah, you know, Matt, you asked me when we started this conversation, what changed over the last 4 or 5 years? And that is one big change, that is, brands are no longer fully in control. Started before 2019, but it is so obvious lately. In fact, a few days ago, you might have seen the story about Bud Light that wanted to start a very inclusive campaign with a transgender spokesperson. And right. that completely backfired, whereby people in the most conservative zip codes areas boycotted the product. And as we speak, sales of Bud Light are down 20% in some markets. And to make it even worse, it is their direct competitors, Coors Light and Miller Light, that are capturing almost 100% of that business. And so that is flashing red at AB InBev, because we know how hard it is to bring people to the brand, and we know how easily they can switch to competitors. So back to your point, Matt, well, we have to start from the assumption, or rather we have to acknowledge that we marketers are no longer fully in control, that our audience has a great deal of leverage over what we do and how we do it. And instead of resisting this as a marketer, my recommendation is to harness this, whereby you, the brand strategist, the marketer, the market researcher, you're going to establish the foundations of the brand, what it stands for and what not. And next, you will have to let go of some control and possibly even crowdsource part of your creative and certainly the narrative that people are going to associate with the brand.
Okay. I can see that. That makes sense. And then, you know, as we were talking earlier about evolution and how you evolve in certain areas with the brand, I think if you have a good handle on that co-creation process, then it's going to help you understand where you should and where you should not evolve.
Indeed. And I shared a very rough story for AB InBev and the Bud Light product, but the opposite is true. Look at Vaseline. Vaseline is a brand of petroleum jelly that has been around for so many years. Right. And with all due respect, so far the brand wasn't that exciting. I mean, the product's been the same for years. The packaging's been the same for years. It just wasn't a very sexy product. I'm sure it's very useful. I'm sure it delivers well on the functional benefit of the product. But from an emotional standpoint, it wasn't exactly very exciting. Fast tracking to a few weeks ago, a few months ago, when people on TikTok started to use Vaseline as part of their evening beauty routine that they call slugging, whereby you're going to use the product to make your skin, to moisturize your skin and to prepare your skin for the next day. And Vaseline did the right thing. Vaseline harnessed that trend, engaged with some influencers and even importantly content creators, giving them some creative freedom and encouraging them to promote the product. And that's how Vaseline has gained about 1.5% penetration in US household, which once again, for a product that is that functional and that established, is tremendous success.
That is. And it is pretty cool to understand and to learn about the different uses of that product. So I've got two boys. We every once in a while we go camping. And one of the things that I learned about maybe a couple of years ago to use in starting a campfire is collecting your dryer lint, like as it happens, collect it, put it in a bag, but then also mix it up with Vaseline. Mix the dryer lint with Vaseline. It makes a great fire starter. So maybe I need to get on TikTok and show that to everybody and then have that be another use that people can jump on.
Okay, so one, Matt, you do definitely need to get on TikTok, because I think you'd be highly entertaining. And you already have the hairdo. That's a great start. I think it's a very distinctive brand asset of yours.
It's part of my visual identity.
Indeed it is. And two, here again, what you demonstrated, see what you said? It's really a demonstration of Vaseline probably had not planned for this use of their product right. yet. You're demonstrating how useful the product can be in a different context. for a different purpose than its intended mission, that the reason why it has been created. And think through this. Now you will give Vaseline access to a demographic of, what should I say, male, 35 to 54, head of household with adventure and exploration as psychographics, right? That's pretty much your a description of where you land. And again, I very strongly doubt, that's a nice way to say that we know for a fact that the product has never been targeted at this demographic. So now right. You demonstrate, Matt, what we just said a minute ago. You empowered or empowering yourself to use the product and promote the product in a different context towards a different audience. Yet the product and its design and its packaging hasn't changed one bit and does not need to change. That's where we marketers don't need to reinvent necessarily the product or the font or whatever. I mean, sure, we can do that too. But the marketer on Vaseline needs to get in touch with you and discuss how you can showcase this usage for the product and help Vaseline conquer that audience of yours.
We talk about the need for authenticity, for brands to be more authentic. When you allow for that co-creation and you take what these content creators are doing, these individual content creators, and you amplify that, it's not just the brand saying, hey, you know what, we've got this new idea on how to use our product. No, it's actually showcasing real people with real stories. And to me, that's a way to allow for authentic co-creation.
I couldn't agree more. And again, your Vaseline example is excellent. I don't work on Vaseline and I'm no expert in petroleum jelly, but it would never have occurred to me that through your usage of a product, I could one, uncover a new usage for that product and two, reach a brand new demographic and psychographic. So you are demonstrating the power of co-creation.
That's it. And so allowing for that co-creation, allowing for authenticity, showing real stories, I think, helps generate trust, which is a good thing because you also write, and this is, you know, starting to be more well known among brand leaders, that trust in brands is at its lowest point ever. So what do you think has driven this drop in trust?
Yeah, trust in brands is at its lowest point ever, and it's likely to get even worse. Well, you have too many brands and too many products with benefits that are not necessarily distinctive. You also had for too many years, too much advertising that was really in your face, super tactical, and that didn't really matter. In other words, and that's something we see on social media, that's something we see with programmatic advertising, whereby brands are keen to move products tomorrow or this afternoon or in an hour if they can, yet that's very tactical, not very meaningful to people. And as such, that's a big reason why people lose not only trust, but really interest in brands. Also, because let's face it, some brands, most brands, many brands contribute to not making the world a better place with more garbage and selling us more products we don't need. But what this book shows you, Assemblage, the Art and Science of Brand Transformation, is an opportunity for marketers to make a positive impact, to create brands and products that matter to people and that matter to society and do the right thing so that in turn, people will trust your brand, so that in turn, they will stick with your brand in the long run. What you said about Audio Technica earlier is an excellent example of all this. So I want to be optimistic. You're right to say that trust in brands is at its lowest. But by the way, so is trust in government agencies and media outlets and many other things, right? You don't trust that many people besides the firefighter and maybe the police to some extent. once again, the book is optimistic. It's about how can you be the good guys? How can you make a positive impact? And it shows you how.
So then it's focusing on showing people how you are transforming their lives, transforming the world. Hopefully that helps instill trust. But how can you make sure that if you're saying that you're focusing on purpose, if you're focusing on transformation, that you do it in a way that customers can look at that and actually believe it?
Yeah, that's where authenticity is important, and that's where research comes in. Because as marketers, the truth is we tend to be bubbled and talk to people like ourselves and go to the same conferences and read the same publications and listen to the same podcasts. And that's where a research program that gives you a total understanding and empathetic and authentic understanding of your audience is so important. I keep going back to your Audio Technica and Vaseline examples because those are examples of true consumer listening. And before they're consumers, listen to people. What are these people trying to achieve? So the world transformation, that's where it comes in play. I don't need yet another brand of petroleum jelly. I need a brand that takes me from who I am to who I want to become. In that regard, the brand needs to be transformational. It needs to contribute to my identity project. When you go camping with your kids, you don't just go camping with your kids. You go on an adventure and an exploration, and you are the one showing the way. You are the one leading this exploration. And I want Vaseline to empower you to become this explorer and to take you from who you are, a great marketer, to who you want to become, leading the way as an explorer, and as a leader for your kids in this adventure. And Vaseline is going to enable you to do so. So this is an example of a brand that's meaningful to you, why it is meaningful, how it can stay relevant and meaningful in the long run, because it doesn't provide you just with petroleum jelly.
And the way that you describe that, I really appreciate it, because to me, that also speaks to the different archetypes that we all have, whether we're brands or we're consumers. And the way that you were describing it was Vaseline that would enable me to be the leader, to be the hero of that camping trip. And it's not Vaseline that was the hero. It was Vaseline that's the enabler of that.
That is so important, and cover that length in the book. That's another mistake marketers make too often. The consumer should be positioned as the hero, not the brand. The brand is what facilitates this transformation, again, from who am I and who do I want to become, or facilitates this transformation of making the world a better place, or if anything, make a positive impact on the world around me and the world at large. But you're right, Matt, and that is really covered at length through different archetypes and how to enable this in branding, so that we don't lose sight of, we marketers don't lose sight of whom we are trying to help here, that is people, not even consumers.
And so when we think about it that way, we think about that, okay, so your brand should not be the hero, then there are a few other archetypes to consider. So talk to me about those and how brands can use them to build customer relationships.
Yeah. So in advertising, we often refer to the hero, and that's fine. However, heroes are not always, or most often not, very relatable. And here's why. We all love Batman and Superman and those guys.
Right.
Yet most of us cannot jump from one building to another. That's that's what I mean by...
Please don't try.
At least don't try. Do not try this at home. In the book, I look at anti-heroes and villains and saviors that are other archetypes that tend to be overlooked, yet very, very powerful. And let's take an anti-hero, for example. Well, that is a someone who is going to accomplish things that are heroic, yet an anti-hero is flawed, is challenged,
right,
but he seeks to improve. So James Bond is an anti-hero, right? Whereby he wants to fight evil and he's triumphant at the end, yet he wrestles with issues such as alcohol and his relationship with the other gender, as an example. But we side with him because he wants to improve. And we also know that he went through some suffering, whereby James Bond is an orphan and James Bond is widowed. And Don Draper is another anti-hero, and Tony Soprano is another anti-hero. And all those anti-heroes are very relatable and can be leveraged in advertising. One brand that does this so well is Equinox Health Club, whereby they had this campaign a few months, 3 years ago, maybe, called Equinox Made Me Do It. And the campaign portrays the anti-hero in all of us, that is someone a little bit mischievous, someone who just jumped the fence or sneaked into a multi-million dollar mansion. Right. And that is empowering because, again, that is a promise of transformation from who I am to who I want to become, not just an athlete, someone lifting weights. You can do that at Planet Fitness for $30 a month. You don't have to go to Equinox. That's $200 to $350 a month to lift weights. You have to go to Equinox to be transformed into someone who is slightly mischievous, someone who is going to achieve his goals, and someone who is going to feel like who he wants to become as an outcome.
When you think about it, when you think about storytelling, I think people like to be able to see themselves in the story. And so you have to make that character relatable. So if they're too unrelatable, it may be an enjoyable story, but the audience isn't going to be able to see themselves in it.
And that is exactly how content creators and social media influencers got their start. That's because initially, at least, most of them came across as the guy next door or the girl next door, in contrast with Lady Gaga and George Clooney and fill the blank, Justin Bieber and Justin Timberlake and the Kardashians. Look, all these people are great, but they're no longer as relatable just because 99.9% of us do not live like they do. So all this to say that authenticity and reducing what we call the social distance between the personality and the consumer is key to communicating empathy and authenticity in the brand.
There you go. Yeah. So I mean, it just keeps going back to authenticity. That's not easy for me to say, much less actually show it, but it comes down to authenticity and empathy.
It really does. In our most recent research at Ipsos, that's really what we see. We are taking a close look at what makes brands successful and what makes brands successful in the long run. And what we teased out is what really matters is shaping expectations, not just meeting expectations. It is acting with empathy. And empathy means understand what really matters to people and how brands can add to their lives. And also understanding and leveraging the context. And the context is what's happening around you in at this precise moment, what we would call the moment of truth or the moment of need, right? But you're right. That's how, back to your earlier question, how brands can stand out and do so in a strategic fashion so that they're still around in a number of years.
Something else that you mentioned was being able to help set expectations and doing all those things to help set those expectations, because you talk about this in the book, and I don't think enough people understand this, is that when it comes down to it, perception is reality. Perception is the truth. The brand isn't really what the brand leader says. The brand is what the customer perceives it to be.
Precisely. That's, again, an example of being bubbled as marketing executives, or rather, through this conversation, Matt, and through the book, we are really giving this opportunity to our listeners to not be bubbled, right? But back to your point, it is perception is the truth. That is, the brand is what people say it is, not what you decide it is in a boardroom. And as people, as consumers, we construct our own truths based on our perception of the world, our perception of the brand, the information we are exposed to. And we also construct truth in a way based on what we want the truth to be. So as you said, what matters in marketing is how people perceive the brand, not necessarily what the brand and the product really are. And of course, the art of marketing and the importance of marketing is to create and to evolve this perception for the brand and its products.
So then what can you do to help influence, to help shape those perceptions?
Yeah, that's where you balance those personal, social, cultural attributes. That is, you establish a foundation for your brand, number one, and then you decide to add the attributes, the cultural and social attributes that most matter to the brand. So that's where the word assemblage comes from. That is, you pick and choose from a range of attributes available to you so that you create a brand that is distinctive, that is unique, that is memorable, and that people will come back to in the long run.
And then one of those ways, which sounds like, we talked about this, we mentioned it briefly earlier, was remixing. So explain to me remixing and the remix economy, and what are the implications there?
Yeah, I think it's important for marketers, readers, people in general to understand that most of what's around us, again, it's a remix of what was in existence in the past. People find inspiration. And as such, that's also what I mean when I say the book is empowering. That is, you can do it too. It doesn't matter if you've been in the industry for 6 months or for 20 years. You too likely have some great ideas and the ability to copy, transform, and combine some of the work people did before. That's how the work of Picasso is inspiring. That's how the work of DJ Khaled is inspiring for marketers. That's how the work of David Guetta and Rihanna is inspiring for marketers. And I elaborate on this in the book. But copy, transform, combine, it means you're going to look at products, at brands, at cultural phenomena around you, at the arts, at music, and you're going to repurpose these and combine them into a brand, into a product that will matter to people for years to come.
That's it. So, you know, like you were saying earlier, like there's not much new under the sun, really. It's being able to take, whether it's taking inspiration or taking, you know, like one creation, and whether it's taking inspiration or taking bits and pieces and reusing that in what you're delivering as a brand.
Exactly. Very, very few brands and very, very few invent something new. It's about to create something new from something old. Starbucks has not invented coffee. Starbucks has not even invented the concept of coffee on the go, if you will. That's this concept that Howard Schultz imported from Italy. What Starbucks has invented is it brought this concept to the US, and it has invented a third place that is neither the office nor the home, where you can gather for an experience, meet with friends or meet with acquaintances, and where you can have an interaction with your barista that feels personal and that feels authentic. But the sheer concept of harvesting, roasting, and grinding coffee itself has been around well before Starbucks, and nobody, absolutely nobody, needed Starbucks to deliver a cup of filtered coffee, right? What we need Starbucks to do is, again, to establish that third place and establish that ritual around making the coffee and that relationship, that interaction with the barista. So that's one example, but really most brands are built this way around something that has been copied, transformed, and combined. And again, to empower you to do the same, in the book, I quote examples of things we take for granted as invention, but are not. So Apple did not invent the mouse. Apple right. did not invent the personal computer. Apple did not invent the trash can, the recycling bin that's on your desktop. Apple did not invent the iPod and was not first to market with the MP3 player.
Right.
Hardly ever is Apple first to market. What Apple is doing, has been doing forever, and does so artfully, is creating products that we connect with emotionally because they take me from who am I to who I want to become, someone who has tastes for great design and great user interface and the simplicity of the device and the logo. But Apple does not deliver products that most of the time that are superior from a technological standpoint. And for sure, they're way more expensive. If you look at the camera that's in the iPhone 14, the Google Pixel camera is superior in terms of resolution and in terms of its capabilities. Yet, Apple holds a overwhelmingly big market share over the cell phone, over the smartphone market in the US, right? Apple is the leader well ahead of anyone else, whether it's Samsung, Pixel, and other competitors. So in terms of functional benefits, the product is not superior, but it is superior in terms of the emotional benefit around how it makes me feel. It goes beyond just the design. How does it make me feel to hold this iPhone?
Right. And one of the things that they have placed a lot of focus on over the past, well, couple of decades is something that you also talk in the book is the aesthetic of it, the aesthetic usability.
And that's where, Matt, to your point, and that's where I'm really on board with your thinking. It's the simplicity of it. It's not having more features and benefits. And we see this in market research. If you do a research among USPS customers and you ask them, when would you like the USPS to be open for you? I guarantee you that if you gather all the answers, the USPS will be open from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days of the week, including Christmas and New Year's.
Right.
And that's where you have to make choices, and you cannot give to everyone what he thinks he wants or he thinks he needs. And if you focus on what's essential and what's important and what is simple, you are more likely to be successful.
That's it. You are speaking my language here. All right. So all this understanding around how to do this, how to make a transformational brand, what do we actually need to do to put it into action today?
Yeah, we need to take a step back and look at the world around us and do so in a very genuine, authentic fashion. So that can be a close the laptop type of moment, whereby stop Googling things if you want to be more creative. we default to searching for things on the internet. I do that all the time, just to be clear. But what I'm saying is, you don't necessarily discover thing if it's on page one of Google. You know the saying, there is that saying in the industry, the best place to hide a dead body is on page two of Google. So, so if you Google something and you find the answer and you think that you discovered something, well, from an algorithmic standpoint, chances are is because dozens of thousands, possibly millions of people Google the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So what do we need to do? We need to close the laptop and we need to look at the world around us and go on a walk and go to the mall and just observe people. And then we need to be curious. We need to read. We need to listen to great podcasts like yours. And we need to go to art exhibits and we need to listen to new music to have this opportunity to copy, transform, and combine what other creators are doing around us.
So getting out of our digital workspace, getting out into the world and looking for that inspiration. So before I close my laptop on this, I want to ask you one last question. If you were to create a 5-song soundtrack for Assemblage, what songs would you include?
Yeah, and thank you for asking, Matt. And that's a tough one, but it's a good exercise, and it's a tough one because it is not necessarily intuitive to link a book on creating transformative brands to some soundtracks. Yet it's a great demonstration of everything we've discussed on your podcast today.
Right.
And so the songs I would go with is, I would go with Stairway to Heaven from Led Zeppelin. We'd go definitely with a French song from Julien Clerc called Utile, and people can Google the lyrics. It's spelled Utile. But I quote Julien Clerc at the beginning of the book because he says, I want to be useful to live and to dream. Right. And I think that's also something that brands should aspire to. I mean, it's a big goal, but brands can be useful to live and to dream. What else? We also have Wildest Dreams from Taylor Swift. And surely she knows what she's doing about marketing. She knows how to build a personal brand. Here's another great example of someone who, frankly, you know, I don't always relate to her music. We'll leave it at that. But I think she's a very talented individual and definitely an outstanding marketer.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'd go with DJ Khaled. And I, to this day, the song is not new, but when he says, all I do is win no matter what, more money on my mind. I think that's along the lines of those lyrics. And DJ Khaled, once again, I quote DJ Khaled in the book, and I think he's an inspiration for marketers, whereby DJ Khaled, by definition, he copies, transforms, combines what's around him. Keep in mind, folks, that Pharrell Williams does not know how to read music, yet Pharrell Williams won 12 or 13 Grammy Awards and sold millions of records. And Matt, back to your question a minute ago on what do we need to do? I want this book to be empowering for people to say, you can do it too. Now it is your turn. I don't care if you're new to the industry, if maybe you're younger and you think that some C-level executive at your company knows best. Well, no, they do not. You too can bring your contribution to the brand, to the product, and can make a great impact. You probably, in all likelihood, you have a better understanding of culture than so-called senior executives do. And this book shows you how to make an impact no matter where you're at in your career.
Inspirational right there, that anybody can do it, especially if you recognize that you've got that ability to get inspiration from the outside world and use that inspiration.
You got it.
Well, Emmanuel, I've really enjoyed the book. I've enjoyed talking with you today. I know there's a lot more to learn from you. So where can people go to learn more?
Thank you, Matt. You can find the book on Amazon, of course, and other outlets such as Barnes & Noble. Importantly, on Amazon, the book is called Assemblage, The Art and Science of Brand Transformation. It is available as an audiobook as well if you want to listen to the book while you walk out or you commute or you do your grocery shopping, and it's available as a ebook. And then people can connect with me on LinkedIn, and my name is Emmanuel Probst, Emmanuel Probst, Probst, and I will gladly connect with you and address any additional questions you may have.
Oh, Emmanuel, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate you having me on your show, and I appreciate this opportunity to connect with your community today. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Emmanuel Prost. The best way to learn from him is by following him on LinkedIn. I'll link to his profile in the show notes. And if you want to go deeper on his lessons from his book, Assemblage, The Art and Science of Brand Transformation, then you'll definitely want to grab a copy for your own. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all your favorite places to buy books. And if you're enjoying the Simple Brand podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. It's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Jeannie Walters. Jeannie's an award-winning customer experience expert. She's an international keynote speaker, and she's the founder of Experience Investigators. It's a firm helping companies increase sales and customer retention through elevated customer experiences. So from the importance of creating and instilling a customer experience mission to the ideal approach for customer journey mapping, Jeannie and I discussed the right ways to help you and your team demystify that process for improving your customer experience. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Jeannie's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.